Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the 12.3 million viewers sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
All right, Evan, I'm going to let you review yourself this time. Because I think, you know, we're a bit rushed. Your room looks like my room, looks like a hotel room. We may be somewhere else. I should have faced the other way so you could see sort of the rain lashing against the nice bushes next to my room. But I'll let you review yourself because I'm very confident that you will know where I will stand on.
Yeah, not my finest. I don't think you and I have been running around quite a bit. But yep. in all the running around, we did take some time on Monday night, like 12.3 million other people, to take in the rematch of last year's Women's College Basketball Championship, an Elite Eight matchup between LSU and Iowa. I'm really glad you didn't ask me to predict what the viewership was on this, because I would have
been low.
You would have been way low. Off. Again, I said the number at the front there, average 12.6 million viewers, drastically outstripping last year's final, which was 9 million, which was a record for the final. Exceeded a lot of the expectations of people who I do trust, unlike myself, people whose opinions I think are often right about the direction of viewership and international and national interest. Just a really big number, continuing to validate a lot of what we've been saying and what other people have been saying for a while about the power of women's sports and the underutilization or under-commercialization of women's sports.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was very hard to do apples-to-apples comparison back in the day, and when I mean back in the day, I mean like last year, because the women's game was relegated to afternoon time, some other cable channels. Like, to do apples to apples, you got to treat the broadcast the same as the men, which would sort of be, well, I guess you're still not being treated the same because you've got an ESPN championships, you know, versus over-the-air TV, CBS. So I guess we could ask, this game was on ESPN. How about we pose the question to Jimmy Pitaro? Why wasn't the game on ABC with all the hype that went into it? Like, was there a specific reason it couldn't be switched? And I have no idea what was on ABC at that time. And if it was on ABC, what does he think the viewership number would have been?
Well, the first one I think I can answer. You just never know, and you could have looked at the bracket ahead of time and been like, oh, if these two teams win, you're going to get this dream matchup. But if something goes wrong and you end up with Colorado versus,
then relegate whatever you get to ESPN. Only if you get the dream matchup, flop it out. It's really nice to be the owner, Walt Disney, of a over-the-air broadcast network, ABC, as well as the dominant cable network, ESPN. How about you simulcast on both? The demand was there. You could feel it.
This is a good question. ABC in the East Coast, right at 7 o'clock on a Monday, is going to be Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. They don't move those programs all that often.
So then it should have been Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. The question would have been, which game should you put on ABC?
So I think that certainly, yeah, it's a good question about what this would have drawn. If we get the dream,
15 million.
if we get the dream matchup here, if Caitlin Clark keeps winning, if South Carolina keeps winning, the final, I believe, on Sunday night is on ABC. I think we're going to see we'll be fascinated to see what that number is. But yeah, I think there's just so many data points right now, and we can get into how special and unique this is. Caitlin Clark, obviously, potentially a generational talent.
Anytime you have the generational talent, it's unique, right?
Yeah, and Angel Reese, who also a generational talent, who in a lot of ways, narrative-wise, has been the yin to Caitlin's yang in some ways. Yeah, I think there's a lot of perfect stormness to it. And I'm also cognizant of not playing this up too much, I guess, maybe is the other part of that. I get we're opening the show with it, but if these numbers go down, which they probably will in a year or two, I don't want that to look like a failure in some capacity either. I don't want anyone to think that this is the new benchmark by which women's basketball or women's sports.
No, I don't think you can hit failure, Evan, and here's why. One, it's being treated differently. Two, you've seen companies like Ally and some others come in saying, we're going to have some real marketing spend in women's sports. And those are the commitments that were needed to have this be a sustained excellence. I really get a feel like you've really turned a corner in which it's not a one-off just because it's Caitlin. And by the way, did you see Angel Reese is also going pro? She's also decided to go to the WNBA. So
is Carmilla Cardoza, three of the biggest names in women's basketball.
Now the women's league is getting what the men's league has always had. Ready-made stars. Although the NBA lost with one and done. Like, there's a reason why the NBA wanted players in college, at least. Oh, there's multiple. One, they wanted people to go and mature at least a year. And like it or not, even 1 year away on a college campus, living on your own, you do mature. Two, it's a year later for your next contract. So you're a year older. You know, that next contract maybe saves the team a little bit of money. And three, it's a wonder what just one year of an extended March Madness run can do for the promotion of a player. And the best example I can think of is a kid by the name of Carmelo Anthony. Yeah. Just in one run to the championship at Syracuse, he made a name for himself and came into the NBA as a ready-made star.
And when you say ready-made star, the stardom in some ways of kids, young star athletes nowadays is bigger than it used to be, right? Take out the ultimates like your Zions and your Wembys, but for your standard or whatever the class is, just below them but above standard, whatever that is, the social media power of a lot of these young athletes, and particularly female basketball players, right? If you look at the most followed college basketball players in the country right now, men or women, they're all women. Right, you have to. It's all of the big names that people know before you get to any of the male names that you know. Now, I talked to Kathy Engelbert, the commissioner of the WNBA, a few weeks ago when Caitlin Clark declared. She made it very clear that the star power of young women who are excelling at the college level in basketball on social media.
Yep.
Makes them more ready-made stars than she has seen, the WNBA has seen in the past 25 years. And that is a real benefit as well. These women have huge consumer followings, people that have chosen to deliberately follow and see everything that they're doing on social media. And that is extremely valuable as well.
And boy, what a measurement nowadays. You really do look to the Instagrams of the world to see the popularity of these players. And by the way, finding ways to monetize it. If you look at the players that are making the most money, it's the female athletes because they have these huge social media followings. Perfect indicator as to why I think there will be sustained success. And it doesn't even have to be what we traditionally call the revenue-generating sports, right? You know, we have Livy Dunn. You've got athletes in other sports that are not basketball, not football, generating revenue for these athletes in a big time way. So I just think it's here to stay. And whether it's Caitlin Clark or whether it's Angel Reese, you have Juju. So, I mean, people are starting to know the players. In the old days, it was Gino Auriemma. And, you know, you can go pick the star players on UConn. Yeah, and like you knew it was gonna, and then they were going to play Tennessee. No matter what was going on during the year, it was going to be UConn and Tennessee. And they had star players there too. But you just see a difference in the way the game is marketed, the way it is broadcasted, the way it is supported now. And I wonder what we've talked about this. The tall guy on Purdue, what's his name?
Edey is his name.
Zach Edey, okay. So the tall guy on Purdue, and I cannot name a player in the Final Four. Not a single male player can I name in the Final Four.
Yeah, no idea. How much have you watched? I know you watched a little bit of the women's game because
I watched more women's, and that was the LSU Iowa game. More of that than I would say combined on the men's side. I'm just like, because it's just it's become nameless, faceless. Okay, fine, whatever. I'll probably watch some of the championship game, but I just don't find it compelling. I really don't. It just does not seem like, I don't know what the storylines are that the general fan will watch, other than I filled out my bracket and I want to see if I win my pool. Like that's what would draw people to keep watching.
And we should make it clear, I don't want this conversation to sound like the women's tournament is going to outdraw the men's tournament.
No. It's still tremendously popular.
It is very much not going to. But I do think you're right. Yeah, I think there are market forces at play in the men's game that are not at play, at least maybe not yet, in the women's game. Things like how long people tend to stay in school. It's different in the WNBA, how long you need to be removed from your high school class versus what it is in the NBA. And those things actually really do matter. One thing I also want to call attention to, Scott, for a long time, all of the NCAA championships that were not men's college basketball happened under a single ESPN contract. It was one of the great discounts in sports media, maybe outside of CBS and SEC football. That contract was just re-upped. A new $920 million deal, 8 years. It kicks in next year. It re-upped at a big increase over the previous one. But already before that even kicks in next year, these numbers are drastically, I think, rethinking the value of the women's tournament and therefore the value of that huge ESPN package, which includes, again, every other championship that's not March Madness for the men. So it's Frozen Four, it's the College World Series, it's the college softball, it's the college lacrosses, it's the college volleyballs, all that really looks increasingly, as we look at these crazy numbers that the women's basketball tournament is doing, it really looks like ESPN re-upping that eight-year deal at $920 million total really is looking better and better even before the deal even kicks in next year.
All right, you said really smart stuff there. As you know, sometimes my mind wanders. I don't really know what you just said, but
because brilliant.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it was really good. But I'm reading the story that we broke earlier today. Although I should say, like, you know, Seth Davis had mentioned it a while back, but you know, the culmination, the final, the official we wrote today that Fox Sports and AEG are launching another college basketball tournament to coincide with the NCAA tournament, the College Basketball Crown. The way I read it here, it'll be in March of next year in Vegas. New showcase will feature 16 teams, Big Ten, Big East, and Big 12. Guess what? A lot of those conferences play their games on Fox. That will not surprise you.
Shocker.
Yeah, exactly. So and a world at a time when I hear multiple coaches, I'm looking at you, Rick Pitino, and others, saying, I have no desire to go play in the NIT. Why do we need another basketball tournament? And I will answer, I think, in a little bit, by saying that it's not about, I don't think this will be about, like, generating huge, huge, huge numbers. You always hear that, like, won the night. Like, there's a large enough audience to justify an 0-0 kind of deal. Where you own the IP, you're putting it together, you get the teams to participate, you put it on your own network, and it'll probably do better than a rerun of, I don't know, insert drama here.
Yeah, it feels like the same question of why do we play the Bahamas Bowl on December 15th every year between a 6-6 MAC team and a 7-5 Sun Belt team, right? The truth
No, I'm not letting you off easy. Give me that 6-6 MAC team versus the something Sun Belt team. Who would that be?
Let's say it's South Alabama versus Toledo. Let's just call it that, right?
Yeah, why are we doing
during the day on a Tuesday in December, right, from the Bahamas? The truth is that you're right. If you compare it to other programming that might be on at that time, people will watch it and it will be worth the money. I do think this is a really interesting announcement for a few reasons. As you mentioned, there is the NIT. The NIT has been struggling in the face of a lot of changes in college sports, a lot of which we've talked about.
For those who do not know, we should say, for those of a certain age, me and up, the NIT was the thing. Like, that was the big championship. There was the NCAA tournament. That was the thing.
Yeah, so I think this is maybe a glimpse into some of the future of postseason big-time college sports, and maybe more so than it used to be, and in the networks being kind of the driving force behind a lot of that. So I think you're definitely seeing part of that. But yeah, this is a fascinating one because the there's always teams that don't get in that feel some sort of way. We wrote a lot about I can't remember the young man's name, but Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was his nickname at Indiana State. Didn't get into the men's tournament.
Not Kareem. Cream.
Cream. Cream. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's the nickname. Okay. I
just want to make sure. It's Cream.
The Indiana State is now, I think, in the final of the NIT, if not the semifinals. They've made a run. From what I understand, people are still kind of following the story to a degree as well. There's compelling college basketball postseason stories. That's why there's been an NIT and a CBI and a CIT for all these years, right? All these other opportunities. I think the big question is whether it's this Fox tournament or NIT or CBI or CIT, the transfer portal opens before the NCAA tournament or during the first week of the NCAA tournament. There are so many players on all these teams that didn't make the NCAA tournament that are going to want to change teams. They're going to want to do that as soon as possible. You're going to have coaches that maybe don't want to coach two extra games that don't mean that much, but want to get on the road and see some of these kids who are in the transfer portal. I think the equation for who wants to keep playing once you are no longer in contention for the NCAA tournament, but in contention to play in other tournaments, that keeps shifting. And I'll be very curious to see how Fox and AEG, when they put this together, when it comes in March of 2025 in Las Vegas, how they are able to incentivize players and coaches to want to keep playing in games that, let's be honest, don't actually really matter anymore.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Let's be honest. Yes, let's always be honest, Devin, if that's what you want
to
do.
Let's be honest. Yeah.
Speaking of being honest, you know what I love, and I don't think we've ever discussed college hockey on the show, but hell with it. Half of the show is mine, and you know I'm speaking right now, so I get to do it, and I know you don't mind playing along.
Preach.
By the way, focus group of one won the first game at Nationals, 4-1 in the net, over Bishop Kearney Selects. Excellent. A live update, Eben, defeating the Ducks, or leading the Ducks right now, 5-1, entering the third period, so... Yep, could be moving nicely. But we have
quarters.
The semifinals. Let's go from the Final Four to the Frozen Four, which I still think is a much better moniker. BC, the number one overall team in the nation, playing Michigan, which anybody knows is a big brand name in college sports and hockey. And then you got a 2-3 on the other side. BU, again, brand name in hockey, versus Denver, brand name in hockey. We wrote a couple stories recently about college hockey, and readers seem to love it. I kept wondering. I asked a big power commissioner, that power conference commissioner, like, why isn't there more hockey in your conference? Like, would your teams look? And believe it or not, this conference commissioner said the NHL team near that area reached out to, and we'll explain why we're not naming names, but reached out to see if there was something they could do with some of the universities in the area. And the fact remains, it was just too complicated. As you know, to have a Division I program, you've got to have an on-campus rink. You know, that's no problem for BC. If you've ever been to, it's Conti Forum is the big name, but I'm not sure what the specific name is there. But all these other programs have on-campus rinks. Penn State, the Pagulas, donated $90 million, put up a palace to hockey. But that does not mean there is not opportunity for hockey to be a revenue-generating sport in at other universities where, you know, perhaps it's not going to be a total conference alignment. So every school doesn't have to do it. There are Title IX implications. I do understand this. You could also have a women's program. But college sports is in flux. But your take on that Frozen Four taking place, I believe, at the Excel Center in Minneapolis-St. Paul. I know for me, man, that great drama in the lead-up games. And I think fans found it. They'd watch it whole hog.
Yeah, it's a great tournament. I covered it a lot in college. The Princeton team, when I was covering it, went to the NCAA tournament twice.
Shout out Zane Kalemba, goaltender.
Yeah, Minnesota Duluth, and I can't remember where the other one was. I love the tournament. I was going to ask you, Scott, the regionals. One of the regionals was in a tiny arena.
The Centene Community Ice Center outside of St. Louis, where my son's team plays when we go to St. Louis to play all the teams from Chicago and Dallas, and of course the Blues. That's the rink we use. So it's like,
how does that happen? Some of these, I imagine you put these, obviously these regionals sometimes in NHL buildings or buildings that seat 15,000. This felt like a big swing and a miss by whoever the NCAA, however the organizing committee decided to put some college hockey teams that sell out their much bigger arenas in a much more important, higher leverage game in a much smaller venue.
Yeah. We sort of did a quick, the best we can, knee jerk reaction story on, wait a minute, just that this was happening. But I'd love, we need to dig in a little bit more for the NCAA and figure out how in God's name did they wind up at the Centene Community Ice Center. It's the practice facility for the Blues. It's a multi-sheet facility. And the main rink, they have, you know, like somewhere you sit and watch or you stand. But the main rink does have bowl seating, but it's about 3,000 to 2,500, 3,000. Like I said, my 14-year-old focus group or one. I believe we defeated the number one team of the nation. In a game in that rink, 3-0 against the Chicago Reapers. Just to add, Reapers did not see that one coming. But that would be the equivalent of saying, "All right, let's go tops on the men's side here." Who's still alive? Purdue playing against who? Who?
Alabama.
Okay, Purdue, Alabama is going to play in a basketball arena that houses 6,000 people. That just doesn't make any sense. I mean, obviously, the most basic law of economics, supply and demand, the ticket prices will surely go high because there are just, you know, scarcity of tickets. Thankfully, now that we've moved on to the Frozen Four, they're going to an NHL arena in Minneapolis, St. Paul. So at least that makes sense. But the idea of going to a small venue for the regionals, I don't get it. Let's get me the NCAA on the line, please, Mr. Nobody.
And there's a theme here, just to link the conversation we had at the start of this podcast. The NCAA for so long criticized for how little it was doing to monetize the women's tournament. Right. And even now, after all the success that Caitlin Clark and her peers have had in the last few years, there's only two regionals, not four, for the women's basketball tournament. We saw what happened with the Utah team when they were supposed to be playing in Spokane but couldn't get housing anywhere near Spokane. So they were put up in Coeur d'Alene and ran into a few consecutive, very ugly racist incidents when they were staying 40 miles away or 40 minute drive away from where they were supposed to be playing in their NCAA tournament games. The NCAA has, I think rightfully so, in a lot of ways, been quite heavily criticized over the past few years for how little it was doing to actually try to monetize the women's basketball tournament. And you're saying similar things here on the hockey side, right? That the way that they are planning and the way they are executing a product that people actually want to see and would make more money for the NCAA if it was planned in a different way, still seeing some hiccups in the way that they lay out some of these tournaments.
Absolutely. And I wonder what ESPN would have paid, and let's keep in mind that they did re-up their, you know, the women's tournament not long ago. What would the price be had the NCAA waited for this Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese game and sort of looking forward as to what the possibilities are on the women's side and, you know, maybe some demands that the game be on ABC and not ESPN? And something tells me the price paid by the Disney Corporation would have been a wee bit higher than what it was. So good job, Jimmy Pitaro, locking that in long term at what is now going to look like a very good number.
And Frozen Four, part of that package as well, right? So it's all part of the same conversation. A question for you on college hockey, Scott. The Frozen Four, the quarterfinals and the Elite Eight or so in college hockey was this past weekend.
Yeah.
Then the Frozen Four doesn't start until April 11th. What's the obviously they don't want to compete on the same weekend as the men's and women's basketball championships. It seems like a bizarre way to make all these make these men's teams wait essentially 11 days or 12 days between qualifying for the Frozen Four and actually playing in it.
Eben, if I had a nickel for every weird thing that happened in the hockey world from youth right on straight through college, I would own the rink that they play in and just use my rink for free. Just come here and play so I don't have to buy tickets. The focus group of one finds himself in Plymouth, Michigan. That's the 09 age group. The 08 age group, which is 1 year older, finds themselves in North Dakota right now. And in case you're wondering, wait, shouldn't these kids be in school? The answer is yes. As a matter of fact, this is happening during a school week. It is not spring break. So I was told that USA Hockey used to give letters to the teams for kids to give to their teachers saying, yes, this isn't BS and, you know, we're holding our championships. I mean, shame on me maybe, but I did my best to make sure that he was caught up on work and the teachers knew and tried to work ahead. But, I mean, we do stretch education over athletics, but my Lord, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you know, the kid's on the ice, he's not in school. So I don't have a lot of answers as to, you know, why it's stretched out, or I don't know if it's an NHL availability with the rink in at Excel as we get towards the playoff crunch time. Maybe the team, you know, needs to have it there, the Wild. So I'm not sure, but good question, and I'm sure we could probably look into that and see why we have that gap.
So let's change gears here. Another big story this week, Endeavor, the huge multifaceted entertainment firm that went private a few years ago, led by Ari Emanuel, went public a few years ago, now going back to private equity giant Silver Lake is buying the minority of the Endeavor Group that it doesn't own and taking it private. A $25 billion deal here, Scott, if you combine Endeavor with the TKO holdings that it has, one of the biggest private equity transactions we've seen in the past decade. I'm not surprised here. I don't think you're surprised here either. I think the writing was on the wall here for a while that this might be the end result for Endeavor. But what's your takeaway from obviously a pretty huge deal in our world?
I like to see who's involved. That's all. I'm always, like we said, nobody's surprised that Endeavor went private. Like nobody, you know, you spun out sort of the public, the portions here, the TKO that's spitting out cash. Okay, now what are you going to do with the rest of the business? So we were not surprised. And of course, there's a long history of Silver Lake being involved in these transactions, anything Endeavor related. So you have the sovereign wealth fund from the UAE.
Mubadala.
Michael Dell's family office, Lexington Partners, and funds owned by Goldman Sachs. Not surprising. I think the price was a little surprising, a little higher than maybe you thought it would have been. You know, I ask you, Endeavor controls 51% of the voting power. So, but you know, enterprise value of $25 billion on Endeavor. Congratulations, Ari Emanuel. another good deal for him, right?
Yeah, Ari has been has not been that quiet about his frustration with how the public markets were valuing.
Yeah, always thought it was undervalued.
Endeavor felt it was undervalued, which I think is probably one of the main reasons you're seeing this move right here. For folks who are curious, the transaction it's a 9% premium to the Endeavor shares as of their closing price on Monday. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating. You and I have talked to a lot of companies, people who run companies that go public from operating private, and it's a different world. And the things that you're able to do, who are you are beholden to, what your profit and motives are, all those things change a bit when you're public. And it's certainly true that a lot of operators, and maybe Ari Emanuel is one of them, feel like the real way to unlock the value of a company is to be able to do things that only private companies can do. So very fascinated to see what this means for Endeavor's business. Endeavor, obviously, the combination of IMG and WME, and it's hard to find parts of our industry that Endeavor isn't touching in some capacity. But very curious to see what happens in the return to being privately held, what differences we begin to see in the way that Endeavor is doing its business.
Well, you and I have on more than one occasion been standing next to each other in a conversation with whether it be a sports team owner whose core job is obviously owner of a company and private, also public, and more than one has voiced displeasure in the inability to execute a multi-year strategy for the business if a company was public, in the never-ending search to satisfy shareholders every single quarter. And I've heard Mike Bloomberg talk about that in the past, saying
the same thing.
It's absolutely impossible to try and have a five-year plan on a publicly traded company because if it does call for a dip or an investment or whatever it may be, non-growth in a quarter or two, your shareholders have a tizzy and a revolt. So certainly going to be easier for Ari to execute the vision as a private company. You know, nobody's looking at the numbers day to day, week to week, quarter to quarter. And you and I understand that. It's got to be really hard. It seems like the missions are absolutely counterintuitive. You know, I'm trying to build a company for the long term, but I've got to show the growth this quarter to make, you know, satisfy the shareholders in the short term. Do shareholders maybe, are they willing to show belief in a CEO who says, this is my long range plan and, you know, believe me, we're going to get there? I guess that's an option. You can try it. I'm not so sure it'll work. But, you know, we you and I have definitely seen it more than once where, you know, folks in the business say, man, it's a whole lot easier as a private company.
Before we wrap up, Scott, do you want to tell people where we are right now and what we're doing?
Where, all right. Sure. I mean, without getting too specific, but we can say we're well, hold on. Let me read the this is fun. This because, it you know, things started to leak out. I love this. Hold on. I got to find, I wasn't planning to do this, yeah. But there's the dude on Twitter who tracks flights, right? So last night, he puts out a tweet. A whole bunch of big-name jets flew to Charleston, South Carolina today. A-Rod, Cleveland Browns, Dallas Cowboys, PGA Tour, and about 20 net jets and various charters. Reply if you know what's going on there. Well, you know, Sportico is going on there. Yeah, we you know, that's what's going on there. And our friend Andrew Ross Sorkin from CNBC hosted his morning show from our location, and I guess it's not a secret since they were on the air that Steve Cohen, Ted Leonsis were here, George Pine, Bruin Capital, our co-hosts, our partners in the event that we put out, Bruin Capital, great partners. So what we're doing is sort of convening the smartest people in the industry, having off-the-record conversations about a number of issues that, frankly, and this is what I love about it, have nothing to do with sports. Yep. Just designed to sort of bring everybody together, get a little bit smarter, have some discussions as to where the sports industry is going, where the country is going, where the world is going, where is humanity going? And that is not hyperbole. Like, those are the discussions that we are having. Luckily, we don't spend too much time in our rooms that look, as I see yours now, identical. So,
yeah.
So that is where we are, and that is what we're doing. So unfortunately, we can't go too into it, but let's just say I am 79% smarter on several issues than I was 2 days ago.
Yeah, it's this event is my annual reminder of a healthy dose of optimism, I think, about where the world is going and where technology is taking us, and then a maybe equally healthy dose of fear about various topics, geopolitical, et cetera, and what's happening kind of macro outside of sports world. But no question, it's a fun event that we do with Bruin, and one that's very valuable to us. I'll wrap it up here, Scott. He is Scott Soshnick. You can find him on Twitter at Soshnick. I am Eben Novi Williams. You can find me on Twitter at Novi_Williams. The Sportacast is produced by Aaron Greenwald. Thank you very much to Aaron Greenwald, Sportico's digital media editor. A woman named Cora Veltman would like you to know that you can follow the show at Sportacast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.